he is coming, but.
Oh, he did hear from him, yeah.
Yeah, he is, and Nelson's our first one, yes.
Typically, yeah.
Okay. I'd like to call to order our first work session for October 23rd, 2017. Let's all stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Please call the roll.
Mrs. Bernauer?
Yes.
Mr. Jansen is momentarily. Mr. Ziegler?
Yes.
Mr. Dozen?
Yes.
Mrs. Mack?
Yes. All right, so.
I had taken the liberty to switch some of the orders of the things that we talked about the other day.
Hi.
Mark Mazzolino was nice enough to be able to come and have some conversations about the first discussion on the hockey team, but he has to leave, so we pushed that up so we could have that conversation while he was able to be here.
Okay.
Okay?
All right, great.
So in your red folders, we have a bunch of material that goes in order according to your agenda items. On some additional information. As you recall, we had talked a little bit about some funds that are needed by our hockey team. If you recall from my update, the hockey team has actually became a recognized team through OHSAA a couple years back, and when that happened, it went from a club team to an OHSAA team. And when it turned into or was recognized then by OHSAA, meaning that we're participating in their state tournament, we as a district had not picked up any of the fees associated with that team. So we wanted to have a bigger conversation. I was asked to grab some data from some local districts as to how their funds get paid for specifically for the hockey team. So the first page in your red folder, we surveyed about, 15 districts on here.
Yeah.
Broke it down just into categories, not because it's not so much about what the cost is, but really about who is responsible for paying for the cost of that hockey team. So as you can see, you know, the Board of Education either picks it up or the athletic department picks it up. There's a fund, a barter system. Some of the cities are able to do that because they have local rinks within their city limits, so they're able to barter some time with those school districts. And or the boosters. So we did a kind of a cross section, as you can see. A lot of the school districts, a combination of paying, so it's not just one entity that is paying, but a combination of funds. And so I'm going to let Mark talk a little bit more about this and what other information that you can provide to the board.
Yeah, you know, and all the districts, having done this for a while, you know, most of these ADs, they're all in the same situation we're in. Hockey is very unique because it is so expensive, and you need such specialized equipment and of course, the ice. When a new group, and they started in, I think, like 2002, 2003, and speaking with Mr. Kalinske, they started like with any other club where they come in and they'll sit down and say, we just want to start the team. We don't care. You don't have to give us a thing. We just want to put the name on the jersey and that. Then all those people graduate. And a whole new group, 4 years later, come in and say, oh, how come we don't have this? And how come everyone else has this? And so, as a administrator, you're kind of stuck without an answer, saying, and I always joke and use the saying, no good deed goes unpunished. You want to help somebody, and then all of a sudden, you're stuck by not looking like the bad guy that you haven't done enough for somebody. So, that's kind of where this has morphed into. The hockey people are fantastic. They have been so supportive of everything we're doing. But I can see it. They have to fundraise a lot of money. It's about, give or take the year, and how many home games and that, about $11,000, $12,000 for just ice time, aside from everything else. So what they've done is they have an actual fee that they charge if you want to play to their hockey board, which is parents. And they do a lot of fundraising. And so, when this discussion started, they went to they've asked me, and they also went to our athletic boosters. And what they decided to do along with us is that they're going to contribute to their games and actually pay for the games, which would be about $2,400, and actually pay for their games, which is unique to hockey in that so they could not get away with that, but justify saying we don't have to pay for facilities for other sports. Games are what matters. So that's $2,400. We're going to take over in the athletic department league dues for them, which is another $1,600. So that cuts their budget down by $4,000 right there. Mm-hmm. But then they did ask for more, if not all, help from the boosters or the athletic department in paying for it. And they said, we also would like to go to the Board of Education. And I said, well, okay, but, you know, hold on a second. And I called Joelle and said, hey, I want to give you a heads up that they may come see you and try and alleviate this, because it is a lot. But all our teams are facing a lot, you know. And so I have to be very careful about not playing favorites or saying we'll pay for this and we won't pay for this for others and that. So that's kind of why we're here. I'm happy to answer any questions. This is not me coming to you saying we need money. It's the question's been raised, and I want to try and help and provide information for you.
So where are we with lacrosse? Like that is that a that's a club as well?
That's a club.
So what do we do for them?
We well, it's similar and dissimilar in that it, the similarities it's very expensive. There's a lot of equipment. Where it is we have a facility for
right.
them here. And one of the things I've done is they've always used parent volunteers for everything, taking tickets, scoring, timekeepers, and all. We took that over. They still have their parents who like to do the scoring, and they're well-versed in it. But we cover all the costs for paying our ticket takers, having scoreboard operators. I'm there, or somebody, but usually it's me, putting out the cones and setting the field up and moving the goals. Those are small things, but they are important to them because now parents don't have to do all of those things. But as it pertains to the comparison in hockey, the facilities thing, you know, we have the facility
okay,
here.
So let's move on to the swimming then. Mm-hmm. So how's that work?
The swimming was very similar to the hockey situation, to where the difference there is we do have the Brecksville pool that we use. But they still charge us, and the Board of Education pays about, they raised the fee about $1,600 on us last year. It was a big, first major jump they've had in a while. It's about $8,300 for the year. So the athletic department puts the PO in, but the board pays that.
And we pay $1,600, you said?
$8,300.
So we are
they're asking for the hockey's asking for $1,600?
No.
We're the athletic department's going to pay $1,600 for their league dues, which are just monies to
okay.
that go to the Greater Cleveland Hockey Association. They have two. They've kind of separated it into what it costs for games and what it's cost
right.
for practice time. And so the games are going to be picked up by the athletic boosters. That's about $2,400.
Right.
And depending on the year, and I would have to look at the exact numbers, there's about another $10,000 to $11,000 in practice time.
Okay.
And I do not want to speak for them. I think they would be happy with any help. Obviously, the more the better. But again, I'm not going to say that I can speak for them. But that was what they raised.
So when I wrote to you, we talked about a figure of $8,000, meaning that $4,000 we identified other sources. As Mark has explained, the boosters were picking up $2,400. The athletic department's picking up $1,600 to kind of mirror it after what we do for swimming. So that's
okay.
where that figure came from, was to kind of, you know, say as a board contribution between what athletic boosters was doing, what the athletic department was doing, plus whatever board contribution, it would be about $8,000, exactly what we're paying for the swim team to swim outside of our
right.
facility.
Okay.
And again, it's unique. We do the best we can. Facilities are tough, you know, especially like getting practice time for lacrosse. Not that we can't, but we have to have track after school. They have the middle school kids, so we have to do it after school. And then when they really start moving outside, it's middle of March, end of March, and it's not staying light very late, you know. So it's really a balancing act and trying to get all these facilities even here, let alone somewhere else.
So the pay to participate is just coaches' salaries and
transportation
right? So these extra fees for things like facilities, which in most cases we don't have because it's our own facilities, but in swimming and hockey, it's
That's
not
exactly
our own facility.
Right. Yep.
That's
yeah.
where that doesn't get that never comes into pay to participate
That's
fees.
Correct.
That's all separated out.
Right, and they fundraised for it, and again, like swimming, they're paying a little bit extra too that they fundraise for because they want extra practice time, and it's okay. It's their they become so good and want to try and improve So these are all things that, you know, we deal with and that we're trying to provide everything that we can along with, you know, looking, trying to be fiscally responsible. So.
And I'm sorry, I might have missed it in the beginning, but in terms of it being a club sport or a varsity sport, mm-hmm. hockey is...
Is a varsity sport.
Is a varsity yeah. sport. Mm-hmm. Is lacrosse a club sport?
To give you the real background, when hockey started, they started as a club, even
right.
though the OHSAA at that time recognized hockey.
Okay.
And then they became a club sport maybe, or a recognized sport maybe 10 years ago. Lacrosse was a club sport, and the OHSAA did not recognize it until last year. So then this will be their second year as an OHSAA recognized sport.
So do we have any club sports, or are they all varsity sports?
No, we have boys lacrosse, or I'm sorry, boys volleyball is in okay. the spring. That's a club sport.
Okay.
And there may be a time when the OHSAA looks to recognize that, too.
Okay. And as far as numbers, have swimming and hockey seem to be the most comparable in terms of situations where the facilities we just don't
yeah,
have
yeah.
and they
that's
need to
really
go outside?
About it, yeah, we run into other rental facilities in, you know, during the basketball season. All our teams are practicing and that, and the gyms are taken. In baseball, we'll maybe rent a facility to go hit somewhere, but that's kind of their fundraising to do that. And that's extra stuff. It's nice. It's good. And when we can get them in the gym, we do that. But.
So how many students participate in swimming versus hockey?
Quite a bit more. Yeah. Hockey, we're fluctuating right now right around 20. Swimming will be at least double that, maybe 50. maybe 50. So there's more. And that's been part of the issue with hockey, too, in that... their numbers have gone down. When they were early on, they maybe had 40 kids. Well, the fundraising is a lot easier with 40 kids, you know, because you just have so many more to participate. And then when they charge them, maybe whatever they charge them for to be part of their club, you know, then you have a lot more money there.
Right. Well, and obviously, you know, we want to be fair and equitable, right? Mm-hmm. You don't necessarily want to treat any team necessarily different. But that's why some of the numbers are important, because it's not just, well, you give X amount to swimming, so you should give X amount to hockey.
Right.
I mean, how many students are benefiting from that?
Well, that's true.
And I guess that's part of it, too. I thought
and
swimming was higher.
Maybe they're benefiting because it's a lot cheaper to swim because we're supporting
right.
it than it is to play hockey,
exactly.
which we're not. So,
I was thinking that, too.
You would hope that the numbers would go up if it's a little bit, you know.
Yeah.
And in our case, they don't. The price of the rink is going to be the same whether we bring 35 kids or 20 kids in there, you know, that we have the ice.
Yeah. We've touched on pay to participate covering only coaches and transportation. In a swimming or a hockey, you have direct cash costs. But for our other sports, they're softer costs because we are paying for the football field through one door or another.
Right.
You know, so it is hard to make an apples-to-apples comparison.
Right. And then another thing between swimming and hockey is there's a lot of gear that the kids have to buy to play hockey, where, you know, in swimming there's a cap and a Speedo, and that's about it.
Well, and it's like gymnastics as well.
Right.
Except, you know, I mean, she has a facility where they can do that, but
right.
there's a lot of cost involved with that as
exactly.
well. So is there any downside to this? Is there anything that you think we should know that there might be a downside to this?
No, my biggest fear in anything like this is how it affects, and I tell our coaches this, is I have 20 sports to worry about, 20 varsity sports and a lot of under teams too, to worry about. So I have to make sure that everyone's treated equitably. We're not paying for one and not paying for another. And there really hasn't. All the research has been done. The only real comparison, as we've discussed, would be swimming because of the facility. So no, there really is no downside to this.
Okay.
Any other questions?
No. I'm glad we had the discussion.
Well,
really
I am too. I mean, that's helpful. Okay. I mean, I think we're done, Mark.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you for coming.
Yeah. Thanks for the insights, Mark.
I appreciate it.
Okay, so the next item we had was board pack versus board docs, and that's the board's general feeling was that we were going to hold off on making any decision about that until January, and looking at that then when we have some other board members there. So, is that okay with everyone?
It's okay with me.
Is there any reason that it is a negative to wait? I mean, are we losing anything by waiting?
No, the idea was is that if we talked about it now and moved in that direction, we could have it set up in time for when our new board members are on board in January and begin that training right away. So if we wait till January to make that decision, that's fine. It's just going to push it back a couple months just to get it set up and get training on it. But it's there's really no, you know, downside if that's what you choose to do. So.
And at CBCC, we had the board pack, and it showed up on our, you know, there was basically an email. It showed up. And the documents were all populated, and it was kind of, it, you know, it was nothing.
Yeah, and so, I just want to remind you too that one of the reasons this came back to conversation, if you remember from our policy meeting with Pat Corbett, our policy NEOLA is going to a board doc platform, which is not compatible with board pack, and so. Because they're going to that platform, if the board chooses to go with board PAC, we would now be navigating two systems. And so the conversation came back to light was because, okay, if NEOLA is going this and this is the way it is, do we want as a board to navigate two systems? Or even though we know it's a little bit more expensive, do we consider going to the board doc model just because that's where our board policies will be and it'll be a lot easier to interface with that? So that was the reason this was brought back up for the conversation to consider board docs. So I just want to make sure that we're remembering that as we're considering this moving forward.
Other than NEOLA, is there any other entity that we interact with that has adopted one or the other that we know of?
Not that I know of. You have both sets of information. The board pack is really simple. They just it's pricing, so it's an email, and then if you want, they can go and you can do the interactive. You have to log in and you can do an interactive, and they'll go through it. The board docs is actually all the information is here for you. It just talks about our proposal, what the costs are in here, and then all of the features. They have different types, so you can choose which one you want. If you what they call the light version and the XL version, which would be that has a lot more features to it. You know, again, without diving into it, I don't have a recommendation for you if that's the where you want to go to say if it's this model versus another. But once we get there, if that's where you want to go, then we can look into that a little bit deeper. So, but the information is in your folder.
Okay. All right. So RFQs for legal services. So
yes.
Where are we at?
Yeah. So we sent out our request for qualifications to 40 different law firms throughout the state of Ohio that do educational law. So that was the Google search. It was nothing more, nothing less. We received seven proposals. The deadline was just last Friday, so we have those. In a conversation that I had with Kathleen, we talked about maybe narrowing that down to five to present to you for consideration. We need to do those interviews, you tell me what you want, if you'd like to review the paper copies first of the five that we present to you, or we can just set up five interviews at a date that's convenient for you at another work session here in the next couple of weeks. You tell me what you would prefer with that. If you want to do a paper screen or just set up the interviews.
So, you know, we just finished this at CBCC. And we broke it up. We had we had it in two different meetings. We had three and three. And we just called them in before the board meeting and, you know, just had a 15-minute session, get to know you, tell us what you got, give us your packet. And then, you know, that was it.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't really even have a discussion on it as much, just kind of making sure, you know, we're doing our due diligence. And then, you know, putting them on the list doesn't mean you use them as well. So
was that the objective? That you were going for at CBCC, which is really just getting you on the list or not on the list.
Yes, because ours
are
because
you're not signing any contract or committing any work.
We may be opening, but that was not the purpose at all. It was that our list was getting thinner than we felt comfortable with as well.
Did those proposals include any pricing information?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, in fact, we asked them that question.
Right.
We went through a series of five general questions.
So was that just the pricing information that was shared, was that just a commitment to that pricing for the following year, 2018?
Yes. And one person told us that one person said that we are planning on having that discussion about changing the pricing and it would go up this much.
Okay.
Go ahead.
This way.
Currently we have how many people on an approved list? How many firms?
Like three, well, I mean, no, we have more than that.
I lost count.
I think there's five, yes.
Do you know out of those five, did all five throw their hat back in the ring?
So we had a conversation about this, and we opted not to send them those for a request for qualifications, because you've worked with them, you know them. It's it's a pretty extensive process. And the thought was, if you went through and interviewed some others and you didn't want to add them to your list, you already had people that you knew. So It wasn't necessary to ask those people for a request for qualifications. You can bring those people in as part of it if you want, but you know, we work with them on a daily basis. We know what you have with them. So these would be all new firms that you have not had experience with, the seven that we received. So
yeah, I like the idea of bringing them in individually as part of scheduled meetings ahead of time or whatever. Right. I think that makes good sense, and we get a feel for
it's just who a 15-minute get to know you. There's five standard questions. Mm-hmm. Any other questions that we have for them? It was good. I mean, you know, we asked them what their specialty was and what districts they worked with. It was good. Mm-hmm.
Response time.
Yeah, and they're all pretty general. Like, response time. Anyways, but they're generally, they work with districts around here. I kept finding that common theme.
Yeah.
I mean, there was nobody, there was a couple that had satellites in Columbus, but they all were well known around
in
here.
In the area.
Yeah. And since we're not looking for like negotiations or something specific, it seems like, you know, it's a good opportunity to get to know some people in a different capacity.
I would think we would want to bring our current firms in too, just to see if they could sharpen their pencils a little on their pricing. I mean, we saw that the last time we went out, we got different pricing when we were looking for firms for negotiations 6 years ago.
Well, could we not have them in and just tell them here is what we've been offered and then say it that way rather than?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's an option too. If we're comfortable with, you know, obviously, and I don't know how much we use each one of them, you know, but I mean, that's another way to go. Just say, hey, you know what, we're looking at everybody, and you know, do you want to
be more competitive?
Update your pricing for our consideration?
Right. Okay.
So am I hearing you that you want two different days to bring in, possibly five?
Well, if
three
it's five,
one day?
Yeah, it's too many to do it once, I think.
So like,
okay.
Yeah, so
three,
November,
one day.
Like for the November one, and bring them in during our work session, like for, well, that's good. Yeah, I don't know. I hate to do that for work session.
So if we need another one, then plop one in, not a Wednesday or something. So, I mean,
okay.
Got to take the time, you know.
Yeah, okay.
So three, one day, two, and 2 days in November? Are you comfortable one week, one another week, or do you want them like a Tuesday,
December,
Thursday, or something?
Why don't you do November board meeting, December board meeting? Is that agreeable?
So you're going to do these plus
do
the
three.
Work session plus the meeting plus possibly.
No, we'll do these as part of the work sessions.
As part of the work session.
Oh, okay.
In November. Okay. Because you said they're about 15 minutes is what you did.
Huh?
Should that be open?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
You said it took about 15 minutes?
Yeah.
So it's about 45. Yeah. So that will be good. 45 minutes, 1.5 hour. The other one should leave then time for whatever else.
Right. So we assign them like 5:15.
Okay.
No, sorry. 6:15.
Yep.
6:30.
Okay.
So who's going to make the decision on which two to cut? Are we going to?
We don't have to.
You don't have to. You could put all five on the list
if you
want.
You can take five.
I thought you said there were seven.
No, there were seven. Kathleen had asked that. The cabinet and I just kind of screen them and bring to the board five. So we will look at them as a
unless
cabinet
you guys
and decide.
Want seven. I mean, it just.
Well, I don't
like
know. I mean,
how
if
we're
it's
gonna, I don't know how we're going to get that done before our approval. We could bring them in. We could, you know, settle on the five, and then we could come back in January and have two more. But I just want to start the new year for that approval list.
Sure, for the organizational meeting.
Is that okay?
Yeah, I mean, I would think that you're, you know, when we go through this process, that you're going to identify, you know, as a staff, identify which firm is going to handle what type of work, and that you know, if some work comes in, you know, some type of work comes in, that you're not going to open up a list and have three to pick from and then decide, let's see which one, right? That you're we're probably honing in, like, so, you know, whether we end up with five on our list or six or whatever, I would think it would be structured in a way where it's like, okay, this firm is on here because we really ideally want to use them for this type of legal work.
For property tax.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And that's kind of how we have it structured now. So yeah. we have a one firm that deals strictly with, you know, taxes and that kind of thing, and our insurance that, you know, we only use for that. We have another firm that we use now specifically for special education. So we already have some of those things now. So it wouldn't be just kind of this open, we're going to use you for everything. And I think that's what our cabinet will look at and determine is like, okay, we need this person will be really good for this, and kind of, you know, and then have that information come to you so you can say this is what we're kind of looking at.
Are we good?
Okay.
So we have two board policies. We're going to be having their first readings.
Well, this is a discussion as to whether or not you even want these policies as part of. So the first one is not really a policy, but it's a resolution on the use of drones in our district. We talked about this briefly last year. We determined at the last policy meeting last year that this was not something that we wanted to put in place. As you recall, Broadview Heights was trying to put something into their law about that to regulate it. I had some conversation with their council there. They decided to pull the school out because, you know, when I asked the question, how are you going to monitor all of this? They said, well, you're going to monitor it. And I said, no, we're not going to monitor this. So they pulled it out of their legislation. Wasn't an issue. And then this year at the high school, we opened up the club fair, and there is a group of kids who are interested in learning as a club to fly the drone and how it operates and so forth. So in order for them to do that, I told Steve, I said, hold on, we don't have anything in our policy or a resolution that says that we can do this. So we're bringing it to your attention for you to consider adopting a policy for the use of our kids to use it in a club fashion. So not to use or videotape any of our football games or anything like that, but really just to learn the intricacies of flying drones through a club, and where we have a staff advisor that would be overseeing that club. So that would be the purpose of the resolution. There are two copies in your materials for you to consider if that is something that you want to do. The second policy is on crowdfunding. Currently in our, we don't have any specific policies around crowdfunding, but what we do have in our student, under student fundraising, in one of your pages, it's highlighted in yellow, it's policy 5830. We do have a sentence in there that says crowdfunding activities aimed at raising funds for specific classroom or school activity, including extracurricular activities, or obtain supplemental resources, i.e. supplies or equipment, that are not required to provide free permitted, but are they need specific approval by the superintendent. So in other words, we already have something in our policy that says to the kids, for kid purposes and for student fundraising, that they'd have to get that approved. The general crowdfunding would then apply district-wide if we're going to allow it for other aspects outside of student fundraising. So another policy for your consideration, if it's something that you think you want to make part of your policy, there's a whole policy and a guideline that goes around with it. And we have a couple situations right now. Teachers are doing some wonderful things that are outside of the scope of their work. So in other words, we have a teacher at the high school who is currently going to be running a marathon, and all the funds that he raises is going to go towards a cancer research. And so he set up a crowdfunding account to get donations for that. And 100% of his donations are going towards this charitable cause. But again, it bars a line because we have ethics codes that talk about, you know, gifts, and is it considered a gift, and do we want to do that? So the idea was, should we put some policy around it to say what is appropriate for staff to do when they're doing these outside activities, or do we just monitor it as we've been doing? In this particular case, this teacher came right away and said, here's what I'm doing, is this okay? And I said to this teacher, I am comfortable with you sending this out to staff. I'm not comfortable with kids because it blurs the line of if they donate to you more than $50 or $25, I don't want you to get in a situation where it becomes then, you know, an ethics violation. So that's what I'm comfortable with. We can back that with policy. I can continue to monitor it the way I've been monitoring it, completely up to you, but there's two policies for your consideration in there on that.
So I asked Joelle to like consider that because it happened in the district that I'm in. It just is a nice checkpoint for the superintendent to know what's going on in their district. It's, you know, very rarely is it disapproved, although I did see one disapproved because there would be some eventual cost for the board based on what the teacher was crowdfunding. So it's that upkeep thing again.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not, this is happening in other districts, so it's just a good way to keep her in the loop because somebody came to her, but they may not, you know.
No, I mean, I would agree that you've got to know what's going on, and, you know.
Well, we had it happen with the band bus, remember? Good intention, but you start crowdfunding for a bus, event, that becomes a liability thing. Well, it's for the instruments or something to hold the instruments. So, and I don't know, is anybody against for getting that going with that policy of just needing to check in with the superintendent first?
If you want to take it on. I mean, you have to promulgate it so that, you know, you have the confidence that everybody knows that that's what has to be done, so you don't have the, well, I didn't know.
Well, she and I talked about, there's something that we use called School Works, where she can send it out and they have to go on and read the policy if it's a big change that she wants them to know about. Yeah, and so it comes up, it says, I read the policy, and then they click on it. And it's as quick as it, she doesn't do that for all the policies, obviously, but she said if it's something she wants them to notice.
Students don't do that, though.
No, just the instructors.
I think we're covered with the students in our current policy, so this would be more of, you know, just something that we would have for the district. So if you're okay, we'll make the edits and look at it and, you know, get it into that, the format that you're used to when you see a first read where you see the read out, the line items, and we can put it on then for next board meeting to go on as a first read. And then your thoughts on the drone resolution, because again, that would just be a one-time thing at the meeting in November.
I mean, I think what's going on with drones, I think we're better off getting ahead of it and at least giving the kids an outlet. I mean, that's the first thing you heard with this Niger thing. As soon as something happened, the drone went up to see what the hell was going on.
No, it's 21st century.
I know, that's what I'm saying. I mean, all of a sudden, drones in the last 5 years, not even maybe, are becoming really a major thing. So I would support it.
I would as well.
I will work with legal to come up with a resolution for that and then present it to you prior to the next board meeting so you can review it.
It's a learning opportunity for the club to come up with their policy. Present.
We need to give them a little guidance first, and then maybe they can tweak it.
Otherwise, you'll see a camera outside your window.
Yeah. For the crowdfunding, I just want to be make sure I understand this correctly. So this would not be somebody that, even if they were an employer of ours, that they went out on Facebook and did something. This would be only if they were soliciting donations here?
For something, yes. For something here. Or, like in this particular case with this teacher, it depends on who you're asking for those donations and what it's going for. So
there is no here.
Right.
Because a teacher can't friend people on Facebook. We have a social media policy that I thought that said that. Or no?
They have parents that are, I'm sure.
Over 18, under 18?
No, I'm talking about parents.
Yeah, parents
You're
is fine.
Just talking about
yeah,
students.
Yeah, so you said if they did it.
Okay, so this is just that they can't solicit money from students. Okay, I just want to make sure.
Well, not necessarily.
Yeah, I mean, for parents too. I mean, it comes into that whole conversation that you talk about, you know, we don't allow current teachers of students to tutor their kids, you know, for profit. And the reason is that teacher has some say over a student's grade or their progress.
Right.
And so you don't want to blur that line. So it would be the same with this crowdfunding. So you wouldn't necessarily want your parents of current, you know, if this teacher's current parents are giving them money, it could blur that line to say, well, I just donated.
If my kid's in trouble,
right,
we're going to get some money.
That's right. So it kind of blurs that line. So we can clear it up by having a policy that talks about what's appropriate crowdfunding. If it's an outside and you're using it for outside things and, you know, maybe you don't send it out to your parents and to your kids of anyone or your current students, kind of like we set up the tutoring thing, you know, if you're current students, you shouldn't do this. And so it's just to give some guidance around what they can and cannot do. This came up not only in Kathleen's district, but, you know, in districts, you know, that are maybe their classroom supplies are not where the teachers would like them. And so teachers have set up crowdfunding accounts like GoFundMe and say, oh, fund the crayons I need for my classroom.
Yeah.
That's inappropriate because those are things that should be provided by the school. And so therefore, that's where a lot of this policy came, was to kind of keep it from fundraising for those things that are not appropriate for, you know, outside entities to fund, where it's the school is, you know, should be required to provide those things.
How about since you've come up with the policy, let's see what it looks like, and then let's
perfect
see how people feel then.
Okay.
Is that okay? To keep things moving along with the work session. I want to squeeze something in. Is this okay to change this agenda a little bit?
Yeah, of course it is.
We want to talk about facilities, and I want to make sure we have a discussion of next steps.
It's actually on the agenda for...
It is, but we talked about having it on the work session as well, or no?
We did. You had said to move it here, maybe we'd talk about it, and then recap at the regular meeting and at that facility is what we talked about. So we put it, we were going to write it in on this one, too.
Yeah, so I'd like to write it in unofficially right now. So we can
I saw it on her, so I already wrote it in.
Oh, you did. Okay, so let's just like squeeze that in before dress code, so make sure that we do that. Okay, so where to start? We had that meeting. Do we want to, people have had time to process it?
You know, Mark's not here. He stepped out briefly. Might be good to, on this particular topic, to wait.
Okay.
Do you want to go over the draft agenda or dress code, whichever one?
Okay, let's do dress code.
Okay. So we had a conversation about dress code. I just want to review the process that we went through at the beginning of this school year. You know, as you know, we pulled it last year, and the idea was is that we involved parents. So right at the beginning of this school year, even before school started, I had a conversation with the PSO presidents about they actually brought it up to me and said, Joelle, when are we going to talk about dress code? When are we going to talk about dress code? It was decided at the PSO president's meeting with all of them there that they wanted to be the parent representatives on the dress code committee to talk about dress code. Their feeling was is that they were elected by their school parents and that they should be able to represent the interests of the buildings. And so I asked the question to them, are you able to do that? Are you able to separate your personal views on this from what you're building and represent? And they said, we would be able to do that if you would send out a survey and ask parents and other constituents what they would want on the dress code. So we said, okay. So we collectively created this this survey that went out. They had input on the questions. They provided input back. We made all the changes that they had suggested on the questions prior to it going out. They saw the survey before it went out. It was shared with administrators. It was shared with everyone before it went out. Then the survey went out to all students, grades 4 to 12. It went out to all parents, K to 12. And it went out to all staff members. And so everyone had an opportunity to give their input on the dress code survey. We gave 2 weeks. It was put in an email to all parents to say, hey, make sure you go to dress code. And so everyone knew that this survey was out there. We got the results back. They were tallied on a Google Doc, so no human touched the data. It was automatically tallied as people answered. It was put into this graphical information. We had the results, and when we looked at the results, we had over about 77% specifically of the parents who felt that our dress code needed to be changed or that it was too restrictive. I presented this information back to the parents of the PSO, the presidents. I said, you know, you were the ones that helped create this, so you get to see the information right along when I gave it to you guys. And they looked at it and said, you know, okay, we're a little bit shocked, but we get it. This is what our families are saying. So, you know, I guess we're going to go in this direction. There was still some conversation. So as kind of a way to say, okay, I'm still hearing you. I understand that this is what the data came back. It was, you know, clearly one-sided. I said, but I still hear you, and you are the parent representatives. What if we did something where there was still one more opportunity to come and talk about this? What if we said, okay, we'll look at this data, we'll get this committee together, we'll decide what it is that we want to do, try it out for second semester, and then provide one more opportunity for people to give feedback then as, okay, how did it go? Was it, you know, what are the pros, what are the cons? How did it go? And let's touch base and make one final, if needed, adjustment to a dress code to take it back to go in the handbook then for board approval. So the parents agreed to that. They liked that idea. They thought it was good that they were going to have one more opportunity to weigh in should they need to weigh in or want to weigh in on it and kind of do this kind of trial to see what is it going to look like. You know, some of the bigger concerns in terms of the parents was not so much what the kids were wearing, but the enforcement that goes on now. So we had a conversation about that. I said, certainly if we're going to put a different dress code, that's going to be, you know, my charge to our principals to say, whatever it is that we do, I need to make sure that you're enforcing it and that you're enforcing it consistently, because that has been the biggest issue with the dress code. It's been the perceived lack thereof enforcement of what we currently have. So again, this whole process was decided collectively by the parents. They were in agreement with this, and that was why I said to you, we'd like to look at it second semester. Not that we needed a trial, but it was a way to say, okay, we hear you. We'll do this for a semester, and then we'll still give you one more opportunity to provide feedback, and we'll then make a recommendation. So that was the premise behind why we need not really a trial run, but really to just kind of keep the conversation going for a little bit longer.
Okay, so board member thoughts?
Well, I mean, I shared before, you know, I have a lot of concern about, you know, we're looking at a bond campaign, you know, here, you know, in the second semester. And so it's my feeling that we want to kind of stay, keep things quiet as possible and avoid topics that could unsettle people when we're looking at going on the ballot. And we've already known that this stirred up a lot of feelings from people. And so even though the process has been much more collaborative and we've gotten a lot more consensus on which direction to head, there's still a lot of people that have strong feelings about it. So
I would take 77%, though.
Really?
I think I'd bank on 77%.
Which group are you talking about?
Which group am I talking about that has strong feelings?
Yeah.
A lot of people, not just the 77%. The 23%, I bet, have strong feelings, too.
Yeah, but 77% will carry a vote. And ignoring 77% of their input when we ask them something certainly makes us...
I wasn't suggesting we ignore. I was suggesting we don't roll it out in a trial period the second semester. Why not roll it out the first semester next year?
My concern is it causes confusion. We have a handbook that it reads one way, and if you see the questions that end up on Facebook, where I even see Maria Schneider answering as a parent sometimes, you know, or Kathy Roderick, because she's connected to those people, there's still ambiguity. And I, my concern is more with what trouble it ends up causing, confusion. There's just a lot. It's a big change, you know, to go from, and so that's the thing. I don't know how to roll that out when we already have a handbook that can't be changed, you know, and we have other schools, you know, that they do fundraisers. They've already planned their fundraisers, like student council at the high school. You know, they make money off of sweats and dress downs. I mean, they've already planned that for the year. So why not wait till next year to roll something out? Why do we need a trial for it? That just might create confusion.
Other than it sounds like all of the people that have been involved in this whole process are in agreement with this. So I don't know how we're going to...
Well, I'm glad. But
well, no, I'm just saying the group, right, the PSO presidents and that, right, from what's been reported to us,
That is a representation, though, and to roll out a message over, you know, a whole district, there's other things that are going to happen that we don't even think of. I brought up student council, you know, that's their fundraiser, you know, that the dress down days. So now they lose that money and they can't prepare for it. But now if they see it coming down the pipe, they can plan their fundraising calendar differently.
So couldn't they still pay for that, even though, I mean, honestly, couldn't they
I doubt it's going to be the same amount. That's their main thing. And that's just one thing I'm thinking of. Like, what else is there that I'm not? Like, I talk about the handbook. People use that handbook, and it's in there differently, and it's not going to match, you know, what's going on in the schools. And so then it creates ambiguity.
On the enterprising student who raises the legal issue that now you're discriminating because you're making certain people who are capable of paying to wear certain attire able and discriminating against those who cannot. It's coming. We've heard crazier things.
Well, you might be right.
Well, I think also that I don't know that I would assume that the only people affected by this and that have an opinion on it are going to be parents of students. I think that, you know, this hits the paper about, hey, you know, the dress code's being changed, it's being relaxed, that there can be other voters out there without children in the district that might look at that and say, that doesn't sound like a good idea, and it could be right at the time we're going on the ballot. So I don't see what waiting another 6 months, you know, where this can be put before the board and voted on into the handbook versus, I don't even know how that works because we're not changing the handbook. So now we're putting this in temporarily under, you know, everything, that policy would all go in the handbook. The handbook is good for the whole year, so, you know, we're going to not vote and just arbitrarily change what's in the handbook for 6 months. I mean, why not just wait 6 months and roll it out?
Except for then I think you've got a whole nother year, because if memory serves me correctly, we vote on that handbook in the spring.
No.
What do you mean you have a whole nother year? It would start the next school year.
How could you put it in if you hadn't allowed them to have the 6 months?
I mean, it just would be in. There's no trial.
No, you don't need
trial. Oh, there's no trial.
I'm saying you just, change it.
That was my...
Yeah, we do it in May, but it's for the next year.
Right.
Right, for the next year.
So if you did this trial now, if you were going to do the trial, you're suggesting that we don't have to do the trial at all?
I'm not sure what the trial is going to buy us. I'm not sold that the trial is a benefit. I think that, you know, you've done all the due diligence. We've collaborated. We've gotten settled. You get vetted out. You get the majority says yes. Everybody says, okay, we agree. You bring that recommendation to the board. You fold it into the handbook. We vote on it. Next year, boom. And then next year, if we find out that there's problems, then the next year you can bring more changes to the dress code in the handbook and say, we'll change it. If it's dire, you know, problems with the dress code and it needs to be retooled in the beginning of the January or whatever, then whatever. I'm sure there's a process we can change the handbook in the middle of the year if it's really necessary. But
what percent of our parents responded to the survey? You know.
Yeah, it's in your.
Sorry,
we had 436 responses.
That's huge.
437 responses.
That's huge.
It is.
Where were the administrators? Does that?
They were folded into the staff.
Yeah, she had it all broken. So, Michael, what are your thoughts? The key to, you know, just some thoughts. We're not voting on anything. Just.
I like the fact that since it is a sensitive subject to many people, the trial period where everybody had a chance to actually see that it does or doesn't destroy education, I think would be a good idea.
Okay.
I think if we have a high response rate from people already announcing that, hey, yeah, in spite of what the book says, you know, we've talked to you about this, everybody voted on it, we're going to try this out to see how it goes, I don't see a problem.
You don't see it impacting negatively on the bond possible?
No, my bigger concern is we just asked a bunch of people what they wanted and they were not going to do anything about it.
Okay, right. Mark, what do you think?
Same.
Okay, Mark, you said?
We asked and we are going to do something about it. I would suggest we do something in the beginning of the year in the normal protocol, not right before we go on the ballot with a bond issue.
Debbie?
I'm with Mark.
I would ask that we wait just for continuity reason, but it seems like three people want to move ahead. Okay,
great.
So
thank you.
Is that good direction for you?
Yes, thank
okay.
you.
Draft agenda for the work session. It's right here in the back. This is something Mark and I came up with at our free agenda meeting. I want you to look at it, see if there's anything else that you think should be on this agenda. And this is what we will do at our work session in caucus.
Okay. Do we have a time and place for that yet?
Just she does.
For notes.
2 hours.
Okay. 2 hours. It's at the Hilton. Again, it's the same meeting room I believe that we were in last year. I just have to confirm the time. I believe it's from 4 to 6, but don't quote me on that.
Okay. Don't make it too early in case the Browns are playing.
It's not any earlier than 4, I promise you that.
But we're not staying at
And one of the
we're not yes we're not staying at the Hilton though
but just the meeting is
yeah we're staying right. at the Hyatt but there's that bridge that you can walk all the way through if the weather is bad, but it's going to be in the Hilton, the meeting room.
Okay.
we had offered to change it but it didn't work out that way, and we would have lost money, so we just kept it where it was.
We can walk
right. Yeah, I don't think it's
okay. So and then one of the potential candidates can only come, they can only come one of those days, so I asked them to pick Sunday because I thought that this was important.
But the other two, I'm sorry?
The other two can stay, I think, the full time.
Sure.
Just one of them cannot.
Okay.
So again, the purpose of having a meeting in Columbus while we're there at OSBA is because there's pitifully little time for who's ever joining the board as of January 1 to get to meet current board members and just have discourse. That's the primary driver. It's not that there's something
Absolutely.
Secretive going on there.
And this board meeting will be announced prior to us leaving with the agenda posted, so anyone that wants to see, we can provide that for them.
Would it be okay if we take the facilities and push it to the board meeting? Would that be okay?
Yeah, I think given our time, probably would make sense.
Okay, we're doing pretty well, though, for our first one, especially. Transportation, speech, and debate, yep. Joelle?
Yeah, I just wanted to bring to your attention, you know, we have our speech and debate team. They are not a club that is actually recognized by the school. They do everything on their own. They're fantastic. It's a great group. We have so many kids involved. We're having a little bit of a concern because there are many tournaments that they go to, and kids are being transported by parent volunteers. Right. And we thank them for wanting to do that. But the issue is coming up from liability. Mm-hmm. God forbid something were to happen to one of our kids with parents driving and just the liability. So one of the things that we want to talk about, they have taken our transportation sometimes, but they don't take it all the time. And again, because they're self-paying for everything, there's you know a reason, because they go to a lot of events and a lot of competitions. So I just wanted to talk to you and bring that to your attention that, you know, we're certainly concerned about liability. We don't ever want anything to happen to our kids. We don't want to ever put one of our parents in a situation where, you know, God forbid something were to happen. And so one of the things that we wanted to maybe talk about was, do we require our speech and debate, because it's so many of our kids and because they go to so many competitions, a requirement to say that you need to use our transportation just and provide those buses, you know, still cost paying, but you know, we've never had this conversation with them, and so I wanted to be able to have this conversation and let them know our concerns about that and see if we can figure out some way of, you know, at least coming up with a happy medium to say something. But I just wanted to bring it to your attention because they're not using it on a regular basis, and it's very concerning to us.
Well, and I've watched that. I mean, they restarted that from scratch.
I know. Such a fabulous group.
So it has grown to a large amount of kids, where when it first started, it was not so large. And so it has grown to that. That conversation probably should be had, in other words. Okay. That's my.
We should talk about it. And also, is there a possibility, and I'm not in the insurance business, but getting some kind of blanket liability for the club and the drivers and stuff to at least, I mean, it might be worth looking into, and it might not be as expensive as having to, you know, drive a bus and hire a driver.
Like a one day, like for that
well,
day?
Well, you can make it for the season even. The season. Usually blankets aren't super expensive depending on what they're for. I have no idea what this would cost or how possible it is.
Okay.
I'm just trying to look for another alternative.
I will look into that and report back, and you know, we'll continue the conversation.
How many students are involved with this right now?
We have over 100 now.
100?
So
yeah.
I mean, it's quite a few.
He has grown so much. He's an amazing man.
I mean, pay to participate includes transportation, where we're at 50%. So whatever the fee is for speech and debate, if we added transportation, I assume the board would pick up half the cost, and the reflected amount in the fee would only be...
Yeah, that's a whole other discussion, but yeah.
Pardon me?
They're not even a club.
They're not
a recognized club through us.
Oh.
It's a parent volunteer running it.
Yes.
Okay.
So are all of the participants our students, or is there anybody from outside our organization?
Our kids.
Just ours,
mm-hmm.
By rule?
Good question. I don't know that.
So if it's not a club, how could we mandate that?
Well, because there's still the Brexville Broadview Heights Speech and Debate Club. So just by nature of using our name and affiliated with the schools, even though they're not affiliated through club fees and a recognized club that way, it still puts us into a liability situation where if something were to happen. And so that's where the concern is coming up, is just to, you know, can we somehow maybe shore this up? But I can certainly look into an insurance policy. I can have conversations with Mark and see if we can figure out something that is going to be a little bit more comfortable.
So they could pay for our buses and use our buses without
that's what I need to talk to Mark, you know, in terms of cost of whatever. But I just wanted you to be aware of, you know, kind of this conversation before we have it, just so you know why we're having it, you know.
Right.
Do we have any other clubs out there where this is happening, or is this it?
Not to my knowledge, but we...
And see, we were talking earlier about the hockey.
Are they a club?
They are a club now, so they're added onto the fee schedule. They are a club. We have a PTP fee, correct.
Okay, got it.
Yes.
Okay. This is not.
Does the speech and debate team have interest in becoming a regular sanctioned club?
that's part of the conversation.
Okay. So, I mean, with this number of students and having parents transport, that number of students,
that's huge.
I mean, that's a concern.
Yes, for sure.
Okay.
So
thank you. Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you for starting that conversation.
And then the last topic on here, very quickly, as you know, we had 11 food service workers retire this year. And as you also know, just on recent conversations, it's been a real struggle to try to find substitutes and to fill those positions. And so we have been approached by somebody that would like to work in our food service to take one of the open positions that we still have, who is a retired former boss member. And so we have contract language in the boss contract that we put in there, I think, during just this negotiations. But, you know, based on our conversation from last time, I just wanted to bring it to your attention that we've had this request. We are in need of food service workers, as you know. And it came up in our shared services meeting that we had just last week with boss to talk about, you know, when there's not subs there, some of our ladies in the kitchen are not getting their breaks and going and not having lunch because they need to cover because we can't find subs or people to fill the positions. So it has come to our attention, and we just wanted to ask, you know, your thoughts on, you know, possibly pursuing somebody who is a retired boss to help with the situation with our food service.
I mean, are they being recommended to be?
Well, they are, you know, currently subbing right now, and so that there's a position, yeah, you know, that they could take. But, you know, again, wanted to talk to, yeah, the board first before we would even consider, you know, that as an option. So,
were they? Did they retire from the same position, food service worker?
I believe so. I don't know. If Brian's in here. He could answer that question.
Brian?
Yeah.
Close, but not quite. I think it's assistant head cook, but she was
okay. But food service, but in the food service department.
Food,
okay.
Service.
So does that mean it falls under the retire rehire protocol, where we would have to do a separate reading?
I'm going to have to look. I don't know if that applies to boss, and not just to certified.
Brian, do you know?
Come in
here.
Certified.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you're right.
This is the start. When would this be brought to the board?
It would be next month.
It would be next month. Mm-hmm. So you would have all that information?
Yep, I'll have all that I'll have that information for you in your next update. But I just, again, wanted to bring it up to your attention so you were aware that this is, could be a possibility if it would be something that you would consider.
So if it's somebody they want to hire, I would vote yes.
And you can't fill it. It would be like our heart.
Correct.
To fill positions.
Okay.
Yep.
All right.
Okay.
So we made it through.
Perfect.
So motion to adjourn.
This work session?
Yeah, from the work session. And we'll start another one again.
So moved.
Second.
Okay. Roll call.
Mrs. Bernauer?
Yes.
Mr. Jansen?
Yes.
Mrs. Ziegler?
Yes.
Mr. Dozen?
Yes.
Mrs. Mack?
Yes. Now out of the work session and into the regular meeting. Welcome, everybody.
Don't we have to do it over again?
Yes, we do.